It is my great pleasure to introduce our keynote lunch speaker, Robert Friedland, the founder and executive chairman of Ivanhoe Mines and CEO and co-founder of iPulse.
Well, I've just flown in from China, and before that from London, so you'll have to forgive me. I've been living on a plane. I'm going to explain to you the future of critical minerals. I'm going to talk as quickly as I can. You'll keep up with me, and then we'll have some time for some questions. For those of you that are not geologists, you all know that we're spinning around our axis on this planet at about 1,100 miles an hour when we spin. And some of you may know that we are orbiting our sun as we speak at 66,000 miles per hour. That's how fast our planet goes around the sun. But very few people know that our solar system is rotating around the Milky Way galaxy at over 500,000 miles an hour. In other words, it takes about 230 million years for our solar system to orbit the Milky Way. So one galactic year is 230 million years. So I just want to remind you how vast the universe is, how tiny and fragile this planet is, and where we're really sitting as you're eating this lunch. I want to take you away from thinking you're at University of Southern California and really remind you that we're just human beings living on a very fragile planet. So we are really literally screaming through endless space on a ball of the primarily iron, oxygen, and silicon. And if you drill down to the center of the Earth, our Mother Earth is a naturally occurring nuclear power plant. There's sufficient uranium in the core of the Earth through the enormous pressures that are there. You have a naturally occurring fission reaction, and Mother Earth is actually a nuclear power plant. So if you go to the Mauna Kea volcano in Hawaii and you look over the edge, you see all that lava. Where do you think that heat came from? So we're literally just floating on little bits of, take the boiling milk and you let it cool off. That very thin layer that you get on top of boiling milk when it cools off, those are the continents. We're screaming through space on a liquid center golf ball, and it's very hot down there, which is why generally where that man with the red suit and the horns is depicted down there, it's generally considered to be hot down there. So we're 4.5 billion years old. Well, let's go back here. Let's go back. So the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, according to our best estimates, and financial markets have existed for the last few nanoseconds, the last few millionths of a second. So these are the number. This is what NASA says about the temperature of the Earth since we started taking very careful temperature records in this cycle. And you can see World War II. And when I was born in 1950, I'm 75 years old, happy to tell you. And not much was happening until China got invented. And when China started growing, we had a real increase in global temperatures. And so if we look today at where we are right now, it's actually physically impossible for us to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. And I don't care whether you like Donald Trump or Joe Biden. It's physically impossible to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. That's already been lost. It's completely lost. There's no chance of that. So on a bad day 68 million years ago, the dinosaurs had a very, very bad day. They were literally wiped out, just like we're sitting here eating lunch, and you all die simultaneously. It happened here. Now, that was only a third of a galactic orbit for a solar system going around the Milky Way once, and we've been around 20 times since this planet was created. Our solar system has orbited the Milky Way 20 times. So a third of a galactic orbit ago, the dinosaurs had a very bad day. You think that can't happen again? So I'd like to always bring you back to Carl Sagan. You know, he founded NASA. He was an astrophysicist. He wrote a fantastic book called The Pale Blue Dot. I would recommend all of it to you as my favorite book because he had the cosmic view of an astrophysicist. He said, look at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everybody you love, everybody you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being, whoever it was, lived out their lives on this pale blue dot. Because you get far enough from Earth, it's just an insignificant little pale blue dot hurtling through space with a nuclear power plant at its core. And this is what we're facing today. We're facing drone warfare that completely, utterly, and totally changes military doctrine. And these things need critical raw materials that are the same damn critical raw materials you need to green the world economy. You want solar, you want wind, you want to build nuclear power, you want transmission, you want big data, you want anything. You need the same metals that we need for this crisis. And NATO's waking up. Military budgets are growing around the world. Let's start with Japan, rearming after World War II, the two Koreas, huge military growth, Taiwan trying to turn into a giant porcupine, China, massive military rearmament at a massive scale, India as well, even Europe now talking about increasing 3.5% of their GDP in defense expenditure. I was in Germany about a week ago at a defense conference. The Germans are absolutely freaking out about Russian drones and Russian incursion into Estonia. And so this is real. Severe risks of the mineral shortages you need for basic national security. Now, when we've been fighting in Ukraine, the volume of conventional explosives that's going on in Ukraine, do you know, is greater than the total volume of explosives in World War II, absent the uranium and the plutonium bomb that America dropped in Japan. We've already had more explosives go boom in Ukraine than all of World War II. And these ATACMS, these accurate munitions, they come out of a 155-millimeter howitzer shell, are very copper-intensive. Because Russian armaments, they just throw lead at you, massive amounts of artillery, and they just kill everything. And we use a much more accurate missile. This is a 155-millimeter copperhead, cleverly named after a poisonous snake, and it's all copper. And when that shell blows up, do you think that copper gets recycled? Now just think about it. I'm going to start, just bear with me for a minute. We first used this photograph in February 2022 when the Russians and the Ukrainians started this conflict. This is the first time since World War II that I recall in Western society where civilians get bombed and killed every day. This is pre-Gaza, by the way. So this is the first time since World War II that you get missiles coming in, killing civilians. And this war is getting on 4 years now. It's just created an incredible amount of destruction. If you ever want to rebuild the Ukraine to what it was before, you need an astronomical amount of copper. But let's talk about what's really going on with drone warfare. It's all about 6G communication networks. So I'm going to use the gentleman here at this table and just tell you, Elon has a low Earth orbiting satellite. The latency is only 27 millionths of a second. 27 millionths of a second. So my AI is sitting here. I've got a big AI system. I'm going to kill this guy right here with a pink tie right there. Wave your hand. Go ahead. I'm going to kill you. My drone knows what you look like. It identifies you. It doesn't like what you do. We picked you out. We send the signal up to that low Earth orbiting satellite. It comes down another 27 millionths of a second. And if my latency in my killing you is quicker than your latency in killing me, you die, I don't. And this has changed everything. We gave a little toy to the Ukrainians. They sank the Moskva, which was the pride of the Russian fleet. 500 Russian boys went down to the bottom of the sea with a toy. So all of these American traditional armaments, aircraft carriers, destroyers, it's all crap. This revolution depends on 6G wireless. So if you have an Apple phone, I have one now. Apple's running on 5.5G. I'm going to explain this to you in a minute. This is all scandium metal. If you don't have scandium metal, we don't have a 5G phone or a 6G phone. So all of these drones are being controlled by 6G wireless communication. Coming, opening soon, at a theater to you. That's how you control these armaments. And it comes down from space. So space is super important. What Elon has done with these low Earth orbiting satellites is mind-blowing. It's incredible that one guy taking LSD, psilocybin, marijuana on the spectrum managed to get these satellites around. They're incredible what this guy's done. He's an American national security asset. And now the Chinese are going to work to put up their own low Earth orbiting satellites, and they're going to try to cut that latency by a millionth of a second. And this is not going away. If you don't understand this, then you're blind. So this is what spectrum looks like. I want you to look at 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, 5.5, 5G plus is what Apple computer is using that right now. 5G plus and then 6G. We only have so much spectrum, guys. It's like real estate. And so what we do is we divide that spectrum into smaller and smaller slices in order to get stuff done. So 6G is what, that's the coming spectrum. Look at 5G already, 5G plus. And you can see that both 5G plus and 6G are totally dependent on something you never heard of. Aluminum scandium nitride. What the hell is that? What is scandium? Well, it's a metal that is classed in the rare earths, which are not rare and not earths. And Rio Tinto just sold 5 tons of scandium nitride to the United States Department of Defense at $6,250,000 a ton. Copper is about $10,000 a ton. If you want to convert that to compare it to silver, silver today is about $45 an ounce. Scandium is about $175 an ounce, so 4 times the value of silver. And the price of scandium has nowhere to go but up because we need to have 6G wireless for military application. And if I'm going to shoot you in the head, or you're going to shoot me in the head, you've got no time to do a net present value model. This is like going to business school and running a spreadsheet. When it comes to military affairs and national security, you either have it or you're dead. In World War II, Franklin D. Roosevelt closed all the gold and silver mines in the United States in 1942. It was called Executive Order L-208. You can Google it. That was to force all the miners in the United States to stop mining gold and silver so that they would mine mine copper and zinc for the war effort. And during World War II, we made our pennies out of zinc. Because copper was so valuable for the war effort, you needed a telescope to see the copper price in World War I and World War II, that we made our pennies out of zinc. Anybody that's a penny collector knows what I'm talking about. So what's going to happen here? The United States is totally dependent on almost every critical mineral on China. And just go through the list. Arsenic, cesium, fluorspar, gallium, niobium, manganese, indium, graphite, rubidium, scandium, that's my favorite, tantalum, titanium, bismuth, antimony, platinum, rare earths, chromium, cobalt, barite. Look at these dependencies. And that's why Donald Trump has agreed to sell NVIDIA chips to China. Because the Chinese are just leaning over, squeezing our testicles, saying, if you don't sell us these rare earths, we will cut off all these critical raw materials and you'll freeze in the dark. And this is because of 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 U.S. administrations sleepwalking and not thinking about the criticality of critical raw materials. Oil, it's all over the place. Coal, it's all over the place. We used to fight wars for crude oil. When we bombed Saddam Hussein, we dropped those bombs on Iraq. Do you think we would have done that, actually, if there wasn't one drop of crude oil? Of course not. But now war is threatened over these critical raw materials because all of these disruptive new technologies, your 6G phone, your wireless, your AI, wait till we get into AI. Wait till I show you what it's really dependent on. We are in the most critical position ever. And when you hear these words, these buzzwords, critical raw materials, you have no idea the panic we have in our own military or the German military. So China has an absolute grip on these raw materials. I mean, it's just absolute. Our chance of catching up in the next 10 years is almost mathematically zero. I've described this as Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The walls are squeezing in. You got to dive under this big trap door. There's this great big ball coming down a ramp to crush you. Where do you think we're going to get these raw materials? Really? So China has now, as of May, export restrictions on gallium, germanium, antimony, tungsten, tellurium, bismuth, indium, and molybdenum, just to start the list. And this just cut this off to zero. So there's Scott Bessent. He used to be at Goldman Sachs. And there's Howard Lutnick with the President of the United States. And suddenly we're worried about a strategic mineral reserve. And we're swimming in crude oil and natural gas in this country. We know how to produce natural gas in this country. So the G7 now are looking at price floors for rare earths to counter China's dominance. The Department of Defense bought some shares in a really fourth-rate rare earth mine. It's in California, but they put a price floor at double the price that China's trading, and that company's now trading a $15 billion market cap from nothing. because we can produce a little of these rare earths, which are not rare, and they're not earths. In the 14th century, when we were coming out of the Dark Ages, there were these guys that were called alchemists. What they wanted to do was convert lead to gold. Remember when they were doing that? They were trying to convert lead to gold. We weren't building cathedrals yet in Europe. We were coming out of the Dark Ages. And at that time, what was the periodic table? There were four elements, ladies and gentlemen, in the 14th century. Earth, air, fire, and water. And, you know, fire is quite pure, and the water is fairly pure. The air looks pretty invisible. But the earth, if there was something in the earth and they didn't know what it was, they called it a rare earth. Anybody talking about rare earths don't know what they're talking about. These are common metals that are in the crust of the earth, but we don't have the technological capability to turn them into useful things like the Chinese do. China's been thinking about this for a long time. When you have 1.4 billion people to feed, the Chinese are very well educated. They did their sums, and they started working on this 30 years ago while we sleptwalked through all kinds of garbage in both Democratic and Republican administrations, and now we've got ourselves in a desperate posture. India is now mulling a strategic rare earth reserve. They got 1.4 billion people to worry about. India is the biggest population in the world. It has surpassed China as the largest country. So, you know, there was the 1970s oil crisis. That was so long ago. Now is the time for critical raw materials. So car makers are warning that China, just by cutting off samarium cobalt magnets, can cripple the U.S. automobile industry. I know the CEO of Ford Motor Company told me in May the Ford Motor Company was just days away from shutting down. The whole Ford Motor Company. And China can do this with Boeing or McDonnell Douglas or anybody because we don't have these materials. And if you think we have these materials, you're crazy. So there is not enough electricity to power America's high-tech ambitions. We just don't have it. I'm going to show you how far behind we really are.
Well, you touched on a great point with energy. I think it's hard to overstate how important energy is to the future here. Eventually, chips, network gear, that will be made by robots, and we'll make that very efficient, and we'll make that cheaper and cheaper. But an electron is an electron. Eventually, the cost of intelligence, the cost of AI, will converge to the cost of energy. And if it'll be how much you can have, the abundance of it will be limited by the abundance of energy. So in terms of long-term strategic investments for the U.S. to make, I can't think of anything more important than energy. Chips and all the other infrastructure also, but energy is where this ends up.
Okay, you're limited by energy. Your AI is limited by energy. Everything you do is limited by energy. So let's take a look at a data center. Data centers are projected to use 1,000 terawatts hour annually by 2026. In geologic time, 2026 is literally a nanosecond from now. Financial markets have only been around for a few nanoseconds. That demand is equal to the electricity consumption of Japan for data centers in less than 2 years. Now let's take a look at these data centers. Oh, Mark Zuckerberg, he says he's going to build a data center so big that it'll cover a significant part of Manhattan if it were placed there. And one ChatGPT prompt. So let's start with this. How many of you have done a Google search? Everybody's done a Google search. So if you do a Google search, you go, yip. You're using the amount of energy that it takes to run a 100-watt light bulb for about 12 seconds. Doesn't sound like a lot. But there's trillions of Google searches. But if you do a ChatGPT-4 or a ChatGPT-5 search, you're using the amount of electricity it used to run an electric light bulb for 2 to 3 minutes. It's 30 or 40 times the energy. And every kid is going to be using AI. Everybody's using AI for everything. 30% of that energy will go to pornography. Another 30% will go to national security. Because that's the way the internet is split. You'll have a beautiful 3D holographic girl or boy robot that you can have sex with and talk to. But it's all AI, and it's incredibly energy intensive. And how much water does it use? Every time you do a GPT search, you're using a huge amount of water. So let's take a look at these servers. These are Tesla servers. We just look at one of those servers. Every server requires gold, silver, palladium, iron, rare earth elements, barium, gallium, indium, niobium, antimony, tantalum, titanium, and tungsten. Did you think it was just copper in those servers? Let's take a look. One Microsoft baby. We just went to Microsoft. We took one data center, one little server box, this big. I mean, these servers are going to be as big as Manhattan. Just one. Uses one data center in Chicago, a very small one, 2 million kilograms of copper, 61,000 kilograms of barium, 10,000 kilograms of antimony, 9,000 kilograms of titanium, indium, silver, tungsten, gold, gallium, titanium, the group of non-rare earth. They're not rare earths, they're not rare and they're not earths, but there's certain metals you don't know about, like dysprosium or terbium, and then the niobium and the palladium. And if you don't have these metals, you don't have a server. You don't have a server, you don't have a data center. You don't have a data center, you're not going to be able to control that missile that's coming to kill you. Are you beginning to understand what I'm talking about? Because nobody's telling you the truth. In this country, people think a ham sandwich comes from a refrigerator. People that are highly educated and live in urban centers, they go to the refrigerator, they open it up, they take the ham sandwich out of the refrigerator. There's 30 million pigs a month being slaughtered in a river of blood outside Chicago. There's trainloads of offal. But in a modern society, nobody understands the supply chain. The people that actually supply do understand the supply chain tend to be Trump voters. They're like loggers, or they're like they raise cattle, or they cut down trees, they do lumber, they're fishermen. But people in urban society have no idea about the supply chain at all. But the Chinese leadership understands the supply chain. To most of you, the supply chain is some mystical, weird concept. Do you have any idea how fragile the system is? Ask the dinosaurs when that thing came in 68 million years ago. So a Google search uses 1,000 joules of energy, and an AI search uses 10 to 30 times more, and now AI is taking over, guys. Like, we're building out these server farms so fast, the energy requirement is going crazy. Here's Shenzhen in 1982. I was 32 years old. I first went to China in 1981. I was 31, and this is Shenzhen today. Now, how much energy overcoming entropy did it take to build that city? How much copper wiring is there? So I'm going to teach this to you. Any renewable technology or green technology is absurdly metals intensive. If you're going to get rid of a conventional car and go with an electric car, you're using six times the minerals to make that electric car. You want an onshore wind farm using nine times more minerals than a gas-fired power plant of similar output. The greener you go, the more metal you need. And so we need to reinvent metal mining. So China has this incredible green transition. They're adding 1,200 gigawatts. 1 gigawatt is a nuclear power plant, ladies and gentlemen. They're adding 1,200 nuclear power plants of installed solar and wind. That's crazy. They're spending $800 billion on this by 2030, which is tomorrow morning. Do you have any idea how far behind we are? I'm going to show you. That's American energy generation. Look at Chinese energy generation. Just look at what we're looking at here. Those are the real numbers. So America has almost no excess energy in its system. The Texas grid is not connected to the rest of the grid. A little cold weather, all of Texas goes down. That power line in the Paradise Fire, 300 people died in Northern California. That power line going to Paradise, California is 106 years old. Did you know that we have power lines in our fragile grid that are 106 years old? If half of you bought a Tesla and plugged it in at 5 p.m., the whole grid would just die. Just die. Boom. We'd sit here in the dark. It's a fantasy. You think you can do that? We don't have the electricity. We don't have the transmission system. We're not even close. So Gridin's investment in China in 2024 was like incredibly massive. The highest ever. They're still building out their grid. Their grid's twice as good as ours. It's much more modern, and they're still going crazy. Copper and aluminum are the primary beneficiaries of the grid spending increase. That $800 billion is going to buy copper, which is money. So how big is the oil market compared to the metals market? If you look at that circle, that's crude oil. You want to get rid of crude oil? The iron ore, the gold, the copper, the aluminum, the nickel, all the metals are so thinly traded and so critical. You have no chance to get off of crude oil. You can't build electric cars and windmills and solar and have a modern military without these metals. So there's a reason why underwater power cables are so expensive. That's what it looks like when you put up a windmill offshore Nantucket Island and you want to bring that electricity and be green. It's all copper, 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 copper. Copper right now, we're expecting that to be a $270 billion a year market by tomorrow morning. And where's this metal going to come from? There's no copper in inventory at all. Let me show you how bad this problem is. In human history, if we go back to Mohenjo-Daro, we have mined 700 million metric tons of copper. So if we put that in a big cube, you see the Eiffel Tower for scale. It's about 430 meters by 430 meters. Approximately 80% of all the copper we've ever mined is still in human possession. Now, if you want to get that back, no problem. We can recycle that. All we have to do is tear down every building in the United States, every building in Europe, every building in Japan and all of China, and we can get back about 80% of that 700 million tons, but we'll be living and freezing in the dark. The lights are on here because the copper that's embedded in this building. We can tear down this university and get the copper back. Yeah, we can recycle it. How much are we using? We're consuming 30 million tons of copper a year, only 4 million tons of which is recycled. That means to maintain 3% GDP growth. Now listen carefully, with no electrification, this is with burning oil and gas. To maintain global 3% GDP growth, we have to mine the same amount of copper in the next 18 years as we mined in the last 10,000 years. In the next 18 years, I've got to mine the same amount of copper as we mined in the last 10,000 years without electrification, without data centers, without solar and wind and the greening of the world economy. You people have no idea whatsoever what we're facing. You're dreaming. Since 1900, the energy to produce copper, the energy you need to make copper, is 16-fold up. As the ore grade in the world goes down, we need more and more energy to produce the very metal that produces the energy, and water consumption has doubled. So grades are declining in the world's mines. The easy copper mines were mined. They're like 100-year-old ladies laying in bed waiting to die in Chile. So Chile counts for a lot. That's 24% of global copper mine production. But, you know, their costs are in the third or fourth quartile. They're very expensive. They burn coal in the Chilean grid. And solar doesn't work for a mine because the sun only shines 5 hours a day. Solar is useless unless you have grid-scale storage. So we're heading for a train wreck in Chile. We need six giant Tier 1 mines to come online every year between now and 2050, when I'm scheduled to be 100 years old, to meet copper demand. That means 40% of the production of our new mines for electrification, data centers, and grid upgrades. And all this bullshit about AI, everything you're hearing, like, it's a fantasy because we don't have the energy. Now, maybe we can build nuclear power plants. What are they made out of? All those metals I told you about. We don't even have the capability in this country to weld the containment vessels in a traditional nuclear power plant. We used to build them in this country. Korea can build a nuclear power plant today. China can build one, but America lost that a long time ago. So the Bank of America has just said yesterday, because of what happened in one mine at Grasberg, $15,000 a ton copper year after next. Copper price raised dramatically. Of course, copper is money. Copper's priced in U.S. dollars. The Trump administration wants the U.S. dollar to be smaller. When's the last time you saw the President of the United States lecture the Federal Reserve Board to print money? Anybody that was a real estate developer in New York likes cheap money. What government like backs Bitcoin against the U.S. dollar and destroys its own currency? That's crazy. And how much energy does it take to mine a Bitcoin, by the way? You think that's green? Where's that energy come from? And by the way, you can all have your Bitcoins in your wallet. If an electromagnetic pulse comes over this town and shoots down a big wave, you'll never see those little invisible bits of electromagnetic energy ever again. They're gone. You should learn about EMP weaponry. It's just wiped out. You'll never be able to eat your Bitcoins or do anything with it in the event of a nuclear conflict. So the copper price must double to meet future mining needs. That's no big deal. I've seen molybdenum go from $1 a pound to $32 a pound. So for the copper price to double, that's no big deal. You know, okay, academics, University of Michigan, Cornell. So the average time from discovery to production of a copper mine is 18 years. It's a miserable business. It's not a business for intelligent people. We've been doing it for 40 years. We have a love-hate relationship with mining. You have no idea how miserable a business it actually is. So now I'm going to show you a way out of this mess, then we're going to take some problems. We cannot mine our way out of the dilemma we find in the human condition. First of all, we failed to regulate AI. We failed. It's out there. So now it's my AI versus your AI, whether you like it or not. India's good at it. China's good at it. Anybody can do it. And these drones are cheap. Like even Indonesia or Turkey can make a great drone. If a million drones are coming at you, if you can't find a way to shoot them down, some of them are going to get through and you die. This is the nature of our flawed species. So I want to tell you about my company here. It's iPulse. We've been around for 20 years. We became a unicorn 10 years ago. We're a private company. And I want to show you the most powerful machine in the world. That's Sandia's Z-Pulse machine. So the Z machine at Sandia, it's in New Mexico. For those of you that saw the movie Oppenheimer, this is what we do is we electromagnetic pulses are used to simulate the conditions at the center of the sun. So what this machine does, it takes a cubic meter of stainless steel, and in a few billionths of a second, it vaporizes it and creates a temperature of 12,000 degrees centigrade and a million atmospheres of pressure, which duplicates the conditions that creates fusion in the center of the sun. This is a machine, the most powerful machine ever made by man, and our species has never made a machine like this. It radiates 80 terawatts of energy. Do you guys know what 80 terawatts is? It's about roughly 10 times the power of all the world's power plants combined. All solar, all wind, all nuclear, all coal. Take that quantum power, multiply it by 10. That's how much power this machine puts out. But it only does it for 50 billionths of a second, because there's a big difference between power and energy. They're two entirely different things. You can take the energy in your cell phone, very little. You can let a kid play with that quantum of energy, but if you squeeze it and release it very slowly, you can have the output of a nuclear power plant in power, but only for a few billionths of a second. I know it's hard to give you a class in plasma physics, and a lot of this is not Newtonian physics, so it's not inherently really obvious. But I made this film. Let's play it, turn it up, and it's going to explain where we have a hope here.
iPulse has developed game-changing technology, and game-changing being hugely disruptive to a whole range of industries.
We're talking here about pulse electrical power, a greener, more efficient, more powerful way to use electrical energy. If you're one of the lucky ones we invite to our labs, it's better than going to Disneyland.
Pulse power is not a new idea. The applications are new. So you discharge energy quickly, in somewhere between 50 billionths of a second to 50 millionths of a second, and you get peak powers from megawatts to terawatts. That's pulsed power. We can crack, fracture, drill, and mine with that energy.
So you can directly experience the difference between power and energy. We just take that energy from your iPhone battery and we liberate that amount of energy for a few millionths of a second into a metric ton of water, 2,200 pounds of water in a steel tank that weighs about 700 pounds, which creates a vacuum as the bubble collapses and it lifts that whole tank to a shocking amount of work. We just want people to feel how much power is liberated from that tiny amount of electrical energy.
So simply put, IROX breaks rock. What you're seeing behind me is ore from the Escondida mine in Chile. And as that falls through the column, we use our proprietary pulse power technology to burst the rock from the inside. Conventionally, we break rock by crushing it from the outside. When you burst it from the inside using a tensile force, you can use up to 80% less energy than conventional grinding technologies. And so we're able to take these large pieces of rock down to a very fine powder, but we do so very efficiently.
You have a chain of events the primary crusher, the sag mill, the ball mill. What we want to do is take away that sag mill and that ball mill. Bye-bye. It's a huge savings in electricity and a much lower carbon footprint.
By breaking rock along mineralogical boundaries, we're able to unlock more of the valuable metals that are trapped inside. We're seeing this translate into up to 5% higher metal recoveries, which is incredibly valuable, both in terms of the companies that are involved, as well as the new metals that are needed for the energy transition.
iPulse, iRox, iMine, these are all examples of breakthrough technologies. They have the potential to radically transform the way that we go about the act of mining and processing. It's going to reduce CO2 emissions, and it's going to make the cost of mining lower, which means that we'll be able to mine these lower grade ores more economically and with less environmental impact than would otherwise be the case.
I think this is going to be a tremendous impact and change in the mining industry. Safety benefits, the decarb benefits, obviously the increased production and the bottom line benefits. It's a quadruple win on all dimensions.
It is technology that I think will be an important part of the change in our industry in terms of how we break through with some techniques that we've used for 100, 150 years.
For whatever reasons, we have some difficulties as an industry to innovate. And here I think we have a good example that innovation is possible.
This is almost like the holy grail that the mining industry has been searching for decades. The technologies that iPulse brings will help mining industry become part of the solution rather than being part of the problem.
Anyway, we became a unicorn 10 years ago. We're an American technology company. You'll be hearing more about us. We have a website, www.ipulse-group.com. But I really want to show you my final passion before we throw this open for questions. I think we need, as a species, an astronomic increase in electrical energy for humanity. I think human progress is directly related to the amount of electrical consumption per person. But we need to do it in a green and sustainable way. And the most obvious answer to me, and I met a gentleman here building small-scale nuclear, that's fine. But Mother Earth is a nuclear power plant, and the best solution is right beneath our feet. So I want to show you a little bit of what we're doing here. We're revolutionizing geothermal power here in the United States. We're an American unicorn. We have some really strong shareholder backing, and we're in a lot of discussions with a lot of the world's governments. So if we take a look at how much heat there is in the world, we can generate to a depth of 3 kilometers. We can generate about half the electrical power that we currently create on planet Earth. If we go down to 10 kilometers, we can generate 5 times more power than we have on this planet, all with zero global warming effects and without any requirement for grid-scale storage. And there's hot rock everywhere. Where are we? We're somewhere in Los Angeles. Looks pretty red down there. We can just drill underneath our feet right here. There's hot rock everywhere. So about 50% of the world's population has 450 degrees C at less than 10 kilometers of depth. So the most obvious and intelligent answer to global warming and the need for data centers over national security is just to have distributed power underneath your feet. But the problem is that up until now, we have to drill in geothermal for natural fractures. If you go to San Francisco, Calistoga, California, Warren Buffett controls a 600 megawatt geothermal power plant, but they had to drill for the natural fractures where you could circulate water through hot rock. What we're envisioning is enhanced geothermal, a robot that goes underground and drives tunnels through hot rock. It's the opposite of the radiator in a car. By circulating water through a closed loop, we make infinite free power utilizing the heat of the Earth, which is, in relation to the human scale, free and infinite. We expect about 6 billion more years of time before Mother Earth runs out of nuclear fuel. So here's a little film about it.
Mother Earth has given us a bounty called geothermal energy, but to tap it, we have to drill deep. If you go down 2 miles, 3 kilometers, you have a reservoir of heat there that's equal to half of all the power that we consume on the planet, half of it. If you're successful in going down to 3 miles, 5 kilometers, you can tap 5 times the energy that the planet consumes every day. 5 times. So there's no energy crisis. There's a crisis in our ability to get the abundant energy that's right under our feet.
We don't need to build nuclear power plants. We don't need to pave the earth in solar cells. We don't need to chop up birds offshore in windmills. We can just utilize the heat of the earth. But we can't do that without a better way to drill and tunnel. And that's what G-Pulse is doing.
The G-Pulse drilling process, which utilizes pulse power and a conventional drill bit, fractures the rock and removes it in very small pieces. It's a technology that will allow us to drill into granite very, very quickly and at a fraction of the cost of today's drilling technology. Conventional drills, even diamond bits, wear out quickly in granite. You can take pulse power, fracture the rock so that the drill bit can grind out the rock quickly without wearing out the bit. That's G-Pulse.
So at the interface of our tool and the rock, with very powerful electromagnetic pulses, the rock stops thinking it's a rock. It thinks it's a gas. It just falls apart.
So you just keep on sending that drill bit down, a bit like Pac-Man, chomp, 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 all the way through, so much quicker than conventional, so much quicker. That means that we've got this continuous loop. We can take water down, we can heat it up in the rock right at the very bottom, and we bring the steam up out on the other side.
And if we can go in and drill these geothermal wells at a fraction of the cost, then we can quickly stand up geothermal plants and supply the energy needs of the future.
We can then tap these huge tract of geothermal energy under the ground up to 3-4 kilometers below, which is energy that can fundamentally alter the world, and we can do it economically.
G-Pulse has already reduced the cost of drilling by 70%, and we are going to commercialize it by 2027.
We're talking about a way to give human beings cheap electrical energy that's green. The scale of that is anything beyond your wildest imagination. We're talking about liberating the equivalent of thousands of nuclear power plants.
That's where the growth opportunity really comes into play. If we can figure out how to extract geothermal energy in a commercial way, it's an infinite source of energy.
In addition to that, G-Pulse can be a tool set to mine hard rocks on a continuous basis. We're going to change underground mining from a drill, evacuate, blast, come back, mark out, into a continuous drill, 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 drill.
There's potential here that through the use of iPulse, you'll be able to conduct those same activities through a more continuous mining process, where you can develop continuous miners using iPulse technology to replace existing methods.
iPulse sits 2 blocks off the gate of Sandia National Labs in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Here you have the leader in pulse power with the largest number of experts in the world. It is probably the premier spot for pulse power today. We will conduct the research, we'll build the prototypes, and we'll integrate them into machines that can actually drill mines faster and at much lower cost than today's technology.
Okay, we're out of time. I don't know, you want to kick me off the stage, or you want to take 1 or 2 questions? Was there anything there that's beyond the limits of your comprehension? I'm 75, we're running out of time. Took a long time to get to this mess. America and most of the Western world is in a crisis for electrical power. I don't want to burn coal. I don't think it's a good idea. I think the world is really getting hotter. You have to be an idiot not to see it. I live on an airplane. It's been incredibly hot everywhere. In Phoenix last year, we had 112 days where it never went below 110 degrees Fahrenheit. That's never happened. So don't be in denial about the fact that the world is warming. And, you know, Carl Sagan predicted it, but, you know, it'll be in fashion to forget about global warming for a while, and then it'll change. It'll go around. It's not going away. But to scale this so that everybody in Bangladesh and Burkina Faso has the right to the kind of lifestyle you do, we need energy. We need clean, sustainable energy. And it's the miners that have found the solution. You know, the Nobel Prize came from dynamite. Alfred Nobel figured out how to drive a tunnel with dynamos. That's stupid. You used to have a hammer and a chisel, and then dynamite came along. And then you can have a tunnel from Chicago to New York and put in a hyperloop. We can make a tunnel from New York all the way to Chicago and put in a hyperloop. But the problem is the cost of driving the tunnel. If you can tunnel cheaply in hot rock, we have no energy crisis. Problem solved, and we are definitely going to do it. 100% for sure. We're commercializing it in 2027. That Japanese fellow was head of science and technology for the Japanese government. He ran all oil and gas for the Japanese government. He's the most powerful guy. So we have the Japanese government, we have the U.S. government, we have the French government. We're going to do this. The company's called iPulse. We're a private unicorn. It came out of the mining business. So we're kind of screwed if we go try mining the old-fashioned way. We cannot mine enough stuff the old-fashioned way. It's just hopeless. Trust me, I've been in the business 40 years. We need new technology, we need new thinking, and we need it taught and understood at the university level. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Any questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Is there any barrier to you commercializing this and getting it rapidly utilized around the world?
The question is there any barrier? Of course not. I mean, where did NVIDIA come from? It's a $3 trillion company. Where did SpaceX come from? I told you, Elon's been taking LSD, psilocybin, ketamine, smoking grass. How did he manage to bring that rocket down backwards and land it on a barge? NASA never did that. Right? NASA never did that. You know how he did it? He gave stock options to people working at Jet Propulsion Labs. He gave stock options to people working at NASA. It was like working for the post office. They all left and went to work at SpaceX. And SpaceX is crossing stock at a $400 billion valuation. People that joined the company are making a killing. So we're just going to go take people from Sandia National Labs, the brightest people we can, give them stock options, and we're going to make geothermal power. That's what's so great about this country. We can do anything. Who's going to stop us? You know, so, you know, we have government, 50% of our R&D was funded by the French government the last 15 years, even though we're an American company. Of course we can do this. We can do anything. That's why I'm telling you about it. You know, you can't buy the stock. I mean, I like trying to push the stock price. We're a private company. Okay, any others? Yeah.
Hi, my name is Ritvik. I just had a question about iPulse and how you guys said it can create 70,000 terawatts of power, but only for a couple, like, billionths of a second. If you could make that power available to be used, would there be a point of even mining if you could make that be used?
No, we'll still be mining. But look, if you think about Genghis Khan, and he's got a catapult, all these guys, they wind the catapult, and they finally put a 200-kilogram boulder on the catapult, and it's released all of a sudden. That's what pulse power is. The mantra is slow charge, rapid discharge. If you take the amount of electricity it takes to run that light bulb for 10 minutes up there, it's 0.00001 of a penny of energy. It takes very little energy to run that light bulb. But if you take that tiny quantum of energy and squeeze it, and release it, you have the output, the power output of a nuclear power plant, but only for a couple millionths of a second. See, a lot of people don't understand plasma physics. So it takes very small amounts of energy to create very large amounts of power. So it's like I rent you a machine that has the power of a nuclear power plant for a billionth of a second, and I charge you $1. What can you do in that billionth of a second? Well, it's amazing what you can do with that second. So when we use compressed electrical energy, we're going to change everything. I'll give you an example. All of you have used pulse power. You know those Chinese tennis rackets with a 9-volt battery in the handle, and you use it to kill a mosquito or a fly, and you do that snap. That's a tiny bit of energy that fries that mosquito or that fly. That's pulse power. You've all tried that device, right? So by able to compress electrical energy and use it cheaply, we have a better way to use electrical energy. There's only three ways to use power. There's alternating current and direct current. That's when Nikola Tesla and George Westinghouse got in a big debate with Thomas Alva Edison. He wanted the world to run on direct current. The third way to use electrical energy has only been used for nuclear weaponry. That's how we ignite atomic bombs. We compress the uranium core with an electromagnetic pulse. So for the first time, this technology is going to the civilian sector. That's what iPulse is. Any of you that work at Sandia National Labs, have you seen the movie Oppenheimer? When they were making that first bomb, they were compressing that pit with C5 plastic explosive. They weren't sure it was going to work. You have to mill a ball of uranium. First, you mine uranium. Then you turn it into a gas. Then you put it into a centrifuge. Then you make it into metal. Then you make a perfect round bowling ball. And then you have to squeeze that ball perfectly within 50 millionths of a second from all sides. And if you do that, right here, we're going to get 10 million atmospheres of pressure and 12,000 degrees centigrade. In other words, LA is vaporized. It's a terrible thing that we invented as humanity, and we're threatening each other with it. It's a terrible thing. But in the 1970s, they stopped using plastic explosive. We started using pulse power to ignite that weaponry. And directed energy weapons, X-ray lasers, Star Wars, it's all the same thing. There are military applications. People are freaking out trying to figure out how to shoot down drones. But what we can do with that technology is we can make cheap electrical energy for everybody in your generation, in your kids' generation, with no global warming effects. It's worth doing. And by the way, we're not going to have all these AIs without some stable, uninterruptible power. It's just not going to happen. It's just a fantasy. The whole thing is a bubble. It's going to collapse of its own weight very, very quickly because it just takes so much power. The limiting factor is the power, the power, the power. And yeah, you can build a nuclear power plant to run your AI. But how long does it take to build a nuclear power plant in the United States? How much time have you really got here? The Wall Street Journal reported that China wants the United States to officially renounce the idea that Taiwan will be an independent country. If we ever start fighting over Taiwan, all those semiconductors are going to be blown up and you're all going to freeze in the dark. So I think it's a great idea to avoid a world war, don't you? And it's really coming back to energy, how we use energy. And we have this primitive tool called AI, and a lot of that capability is either going to frivolous things like pornography or it's going to military applications. And the energy demand is beyond anything you can possibly imagine. Like, it's just crazy. And so we're coming here from the most basic of industries telling you copper is money. You could build your house out of copper bricks. 10 years from now, you can just tear your house down and buy a fleet of electric Lamborghinis with a profit. Because the dollar is failing against copper. The dollar is failing against gold. The dollar is failing against water and food. We face a hyperinflationary era here. No matter what anybody tells you, when's the last time you saw the President of the United States tell the Federal Reserve Board to print? So this is an unprecedented. This is a Vujade phenomenon. The Vujade is the overwhelming feeling that none of this has ever happened before, isn't it? So, you know, somebody, I don't know, Bob Bishop got a hold of me and said I should go to the university and talk to you guys. I'm not trying to be polite. I'm trying to tell you there's a chance to fix this world. And Steve Jobs started all this shit with these little handheld computers, and these things are going to bring us down. If we make tribes and we tear each other apart on social media, we're finished. If I had kids, I wouldn't let them even look and play with these things until they're 18 years old. So I'm kind of a technology Luddite. I'm not very optimistic. I'm kind of on the side of Elon, saying that we're flirting with the end of our species with all this AI. But if we start fighting over energy, then we're finished. And we cannot mine our way out of the problem. I know the mining business. I'm telling you, we just don't have enough metal. We just don't. So we need a better way to do that. Was that understandable, Bob? I did my job. Thank you very much for tolerating this talk. Peace.